Welcome to Sales Players, the number one podcast for top players in B2B sales.
Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out in the world of sales, this is the show for you.
We're all about bringing you fresh, actionable ideas to supercharge your rev gen game.
We dive deep into the mindset, habits, and tools used by top performers in the industry, generate more leads, close more deals, and build wealth and financial security in B2B sales.
So if you're ready to level up, you've come to the right place. Join the conversation with other like-minded sales players and continue the discussion beyond the show.
Hit the subscribe button, tune into the Sales Players, and let's start winning together.
This episode is sponsored by Accord. Accord helps revenue teams drive execution excellence by enforcing their standards for how they sell, onboard, and expand with prospects and customers. Revenue teams can ensure flawless execution of value selling, med pick, account planning, business cases, mutual action plans, and more with Accord's deal execution platform. If you've been a longtime listener of the show, you've probably already heard me talk about how I use mutual action plans, account plans, and business cases to manage and close my enterprise deals. Well, Accord has created a better way to manage the process. They're your solution for deal execution. Your buyers are going to love it because it makes their evaluation process so much easier by helping them seamlessly validate and onboard new and existing vendor partners. I've been super excited to be using Accord to manage my six and seven figure enterprise deals. So for sales players looking to get started with Accord for free, use the link in the show notes to sign up today.
Hey, sales players, before we dive back into the conversation, I wanted to introduce you to a game changer in the lead generation tool arena, and it's called LeadFeeder. Imagine having the power to identify companies visiting your website, tracking their behavior in real time, seamlessly integrating this data in your CRM. LeadFeeder is not just a tool, it's your secret weapon for efficient and targeted lead engagement. What sets LeadFeeder apart is its ability to provide detailed insights into visitor behavior, helping your sales team to prioritize efforts and close deals faster. Ready to revolutionize your approach to leads and deals? Head over to leadfeeder.com for your free demo today. That's LeadFeeder.com. Don't miss out on the future of successful lead generation with LeadFeeder. Plus, if you go to the show notes, we actually have a special link that will give you a 21-day free trial instead of the normal 14-day free trial. Go over today and sign up.
All right, everyone. Today, Chase and I are speaking with Ramon Berrios. Ramon is the co-founder of Cast Magic. Now, Cast Magic is actually a product that we are using for the show now. It's an amazing tool. Go check it out. We've actually got a link down in the show notes. Ramon is awesome. He is a serial entrepreneur. He's started and sold several companies. And in today's episode, he's going to share with us what goes into going to market with a new product and company, how he thinks about marketing, specifically the flywheel concept, which you'll hear more about in the episode. We talk about a product-led growth strategy and how he's planning to continue to scale Cast Magic. Super smart guy. Great product. So without further ado, here's Ramon. All right. Well, we are live here with Ramon Berrios. Ramon, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here. Big fan of the pod.
Awesome. Yeah, we're glad to have you on. Glad that Chase made this connection. Actually, Chase, you want to share how you know Ramon?
Yeah, I mean, to be straight out, Ramon actually came inbound into my Calendly at Hyros and just learned more about his company that he was running, and he looked like he was running ads, and Hyros was a good fit. So that's how we've met each other, and just been following his path. It's really awesome.
Super cool. So Ramon, tell us, give us a little bit of background. What is it you're working on? And you maybe tell the audience a little bit about how you got started.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a two-time founder. This time around, I'm building a company called Cast Magic, which is essentially a content workspace for professionals and content creators looking to extract the most out of their media. So a good way to think about it is like Jasper sort of meets Dropbox, where you upload all of your media. And so now the AI generated content has context from your media. So it's not just AI content, created out of thin air. And so this is my second business. Previously, I built a UGC platform for content creators. That business was acquired. It was a company called Trend.io, got acquired by Suna. And at the time, I was also running a podcast called DTC Pod. And I still run that podcast. And so, you know, the acquisition happened at the time that ChatGPT came out. My co-host of the podcast, also a founder, previous built a marketplace called Seated. And together, we sort of built our own workflow problem around our own podcast. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity was just too big when we started seeing signs of product market fit really early on. And so now here we are full-time on Cast Magic. You know, we have over 40,000 users now in under a year, and the ICP has expanded way beyond podcasters. But maybe I'll put a pause there in terms of, you know, the background.
I really want to hear about, you said you saw some signals in the market, or as you guys were investigating opportunities, there was some signals in the market. Like, how does someone like you spot those kind of opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, I was incredibly fortunate that our other co-founder, Justin, a good friend of mine, is a very talented technical founder as well. And so we had data from early on. And, you know, I've built previous startups before without the right resources. And when you don't have the right data, you're just flying blind. You don't really know, is this product market fit? Is this not? I mean, when you have product market fit, you know, because you just have more inbound than you can handle and more opportunities, and you have to say no to more things. But just to confirm that gut check and that the data is good, that the customers are the core ICP, your retention, your cohorts, et cetera. So we always had that data early on. And I think what I saw was I just saw numbers and signs that I didn't see on everything I had previously tried for years. And, you know, that means that, is there a flywheel in the type of customer that you're attracting? Are they telling other people? Is word of mouth happening? And are these people actually retaining? And then lastly, which is how I ended up in Hyros, is are you acquiring these customers at a profitable rate that you can actually 10x this if you really wanted to? And so those were the early signs that we really leaned into.
And remote, how long has Cast Magic been around, and when did you make the switch of, okay, we got acquired, I'm doing this podcast, I'm going to start another company?
Yeah, so that switch was probably one of the toughest decisions I've ever made. You know, we got acquired, and I made the decision 28 days into the acquisition, and it was a big risk, but you don't often get to pick when an opportunity comes up to you, especially when, you know, there was a few different dynamics, just like really talented co-founders, right market timing. We were customer number one, a product we built to solve our own pain point. And so I would have just suffered of too much FOMO. So that is how the decision came about. I said, look, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go for it. I'm a natural builder and founder. And so that's how I made the decision. I forgot the other part of your question. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
So how long ago did we start it? Yeah, so we have been selling subscriptions for just about a year now, 12 months. And we, you know, we hit six figures in MRR in like 9 months, and the business is growing. And so those were the signs, I think, that really just pulled us and said, there's something here.
And would you say that was AppSumo really like your go-to launch strategy? Talk about your launch strategy and how you got that flywheel effect to go.
Yeah, we were one of the most successful launches that AppSumo has ever had. And I think, you know, it's because we also looked at it from the point of view of, hey, this is the base and foundation of what will be our community, not just to make money once. And, you know, we didn't see it as a burden. A lot of people think that like it can be a burden, too many support tickets, you have to support these people forever, etc. But I've always been of the mindset that if you're selling a prosumer customer, you have to think, if you're thinking that your biggest problem is going to be supporting, say, 1,000 people, you're probably thinking small enough. You should want 10,000 plus customers. And those people aren't per se just complaining about problems. They're giving you feedback at a very rapid pace, and money cannot buy that, right? Like, that is a huge advantage to have. On top of that, we got extremely lucky that our product has these certain traits where our customers also happen to have an audience. And that was a perfect fit for AppSumo. So what we did is we leveraged that initial community of our lifetime customers and evangelized that community and turned them into affiliates, have them promote the product. They talk to their audiences, they have a podcast, and we showed them, hey, we're not just here for a lifetime deal launch, we're actually investing very heavily into the product. And they see that every week we're shipping. And so, you know, we basically say, how do we turn those 1,000 people into 10,000?
And a question for me is, you didn't just say, okay, next week we're just going to be automatically launching on AppSumo. What was the time frame? What was your frame of thought of, like, how far out did you think about, okay, we're starting Cast Magic, we have a launch date here. What was that time frame? And really going forward, what is it looking like as well?
Yeah, so for planning the launch, I think we planned it about a month out. And then I think more of the planning came right around after we launched, to where we just said, how do we get this initial wave of people and continue to increase the ratings on AppSumo? You know, have those people tell other people. And so the launch kind of compounds. Like, it starts kind of quietly, and then a few people try it and they start really raving about it and making content. AppSumo sees that we're actually about it and making a great product. They then pump it even more because they have stages and channels of how they pump it. They don't just throw every product into the main newsletter. You sort of have to earn your way there. I think we were on AppSumo for about 4 months or so, if I remember correctly. I do know it was over 10,000 customer support tickets. So, and it was my co-founder who was there the whole time. Wow. All day, every day. I remember we would go to lunch here in Miami. We're eating, just doing support tickets. Because that feedback was really important. But yeah, it was about a 4 month period. And then, you know, you have the option to stay or not. I think we saw a big opportunity, and it's kind of tough to sell a subscription and a lifetime deal. And so we kind of just rewarded those people, closed shop, started selling subscriptions, and then we continue to promote those people with us forever. You know, they get all the same features, they don't get locked out of anything. That's our base.
So was most of this, it sounds like, was kind of a product-led growth model, or were you out doing a lot of direct selling to some of these clients as well, where you're running through a sales process and a pitch, or both?
Yeah, no, it was never a sales process. It was always inbound. It was always a product-led motion. I think, you know, all the companies I've built have been product-led. We did receive some inbound opportunities that are kind of enterprise go-to-market motions. We kind of looked at that, but we're just a firm believer that whenever you have a product that it just works out of the gates, don't take that for granted. Does it have a flywheel? If the answer is yes, don't step out of that. So we really haven't explored those opportunities yet of, you know, direct sales. Never say never, but right. For right now, we're staying focused on the PLG motion.
Can you actually just, I think a lot of our listeners out there may not be familiar with the concept of a flywheel. How do you think about building a flywheel in a business? And for our listeners who, for the most part, are frontline sellers, maybe working both inbound or outbound leads, how can they align with the concept of building a flywheel in their business?
Yeah. I first learned the concept of flywheel working on my previous company, which was a marketplace. And flywheels are really more for marketplaces than SaaS, but I think it's possible to unlock it for SaaS. And ultimately, what a flywheel is, do you know really well who your customer is and the ones that truly get the most value? So nailing it down to an ICP, a really core ICP, are there enough of those people out there? Is that market big enough? And then what is a unique advantage that you may have by focusing on those people? So in our case, it was that they have an audience. And, you know, can we give them all the tools and resources that they need so they tell other people and their friends and have them earn money while they're doing it, which is turning a community into affiliates. And then lastly is exploring all the other channels. Is there only one channel to do this? Are there multiple channels? And then just testing out the unit economics. And really, that's all you need. You know, anything above that, you know, like oftentimes all you really need is one channel to get to that first million ARR. You can actually have like analysis paralysis trying to nail every channel early on. But all you need is one channel. I like finding more than one simultaneously just to hedge for safety on dependency on a channel. Sure. But really, I think the flywheel is as simple as who are your people? Can you acquire them for a good enough cost? And can you have them tell the other people that they know? And like that can be in a, it doesn't necessarily, when I say tell, can they tell other people? It doesn't need to literally be them, you know, word of mouth telling other people, but sometimes a product can have certain UX elements to it that by nature they just tell other people. I mean, this is why companies like Lemless, Flowdesk, email platforms are really successful, because they have the ConvertKit sent with ConvertKit, etc. at the bottom. And so you can sometimes embed the word of mouth into the product within the UX, within the flow, if your product has the dynamics for that. Of course, I've tried to force this before, and in some businesses it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And Ramon, keeping it very simple, how would you tactically go out and start one of those simple channels of gathering those affiliates? Like, what tools would you use, and how would you start to communicate with that group?
Yeah. So in our case, we saw that affiliate channel was a good channel for us. We started very, very simple with a platform that was called Rewardful, and the channel grew faster than we expected. And so we outgrew the platform in the sense that there just weren't some capabilities that we needed, like the affiliate being able to do their own payouts. We had to manually do every single payout on Stripe every month. I remember I was hating when the 30th or 31st would come up, because I knew I would have to do hundreds of payouts on PayPal. You know, we had to make the investment. We chose a platform called PartnerStack. And the reason we did that is because they had the capability for the affiliate to do their own payout whenever they want to. And so the ROI on us not having to invest the time, it was either hire someone to run all those ops or have the platform make itself serve for the affiliate. And that's a win, because it's less overhead and less management for us. So we did that. And then outside of that, all in Notion, just really good documentation, trying to give our affiliates as much documentation as possible for them to not, you know, for to have all the resources they need, you know, the branding assets, examples of all of the content that creators may have already done, our value propositions in paragraphs and in bullet points, scripts, examples of content we like and look up to that might not just be about cast magic. So, and that's just email flow, automated email flows, etc.
Amazing. And I just saw your post on Friday that you posted, and it says, ending Friday with the realization that cast magic has already generated over 200 million words for our users. So just describe to us, what does cast magic actually do? Like, what are you all actually doing?
Yeah, for sure. So what we do is we turn any conversation or any media file into more content in a digestible way. And so an example of the workflow here is you have a podcast, you finish the recording, you upload, whether it's an MP4 file or an MP3 file into cast magic, it's going to extract show notes, timestamps, every keyword mention, if you want to leverage it for SEO, it'll create bite-sized LinkedIn posts, tweets, it'll turn it into a newsletter. And basically the beauty of it is that it can do, it's not just creating those outputs and that's it. You can modify it and to write in your own style. You can feed it content samples of exactly what it is you want. And we show you the prompts that are generating these outputs so you can customize it however you want. And just for context on the breadth of the type of content it can create, another use case we have is, you know, car dealership uses it for every person that calls in to know what is the car mileage, has the car been serviced here before, and what is the make and model. So really at the end of the day, it's just to capture the value that sits within your media and content to keep removing those barriers for you to produce more content.
How did you discover the auto dealer use case? How did that come about? It sounds quite different than like the podcast use case, but it's really interesting that it's used for that too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was kind of the most overwhelming parts of the business is that there was a bunch of different use cases. In this specific use case, I think we discovered these because, you know, we just talk with our customers a lot, and we were asked about this workflow and if there was more stuff we could do there, like integrating directly with phone lines, etc. Not our core, but we basically just see every day new ways of using Cast Magic that continue to surprise us. Well, the other one is we have people that are turning their podcasts into courses. We're now adding visual media. So you can grab the podcast, and even if it's just audio, we create AI-generated backgrounds with audiograms and create more visual media. So there are a lot of use cases that people do that surprise me. I think our community and our, you know, it's funny because when I talk with a prospect or someone, I have a few ideas, but I'm very limited to what I do. Our community and customers know best the ideas of what Cast Magic is capable, even more so than me. You know, we have a Slack with over 1,400 members, and I tell our prospects, just go in there and see what they're doing. There's like a new one every day.
Wow. No, that's actually really cool that you have the dialogue going with actual users and that they're in there providing that kind of feedback and those kind of insights. I'm sure that's really valuable. So tell us a bit about your team right now. Do you have anybody who focuses on generating, you know, pipeline or anything like that? Or is it all just coming again through that those channels that you already have in place and through the flywheel aspect of the business?
Yeah. So that is my job. Generating the, you know, the pipeline and finding all the growth channels. I'm still the overseer and the hands-on person. Hopefully I can step out of being the one managing the entire growth at some point. I mean, I'll always be in growth. It's just what I love. But we're three co-founders. One is fully technical. The other one sits in product and CX, and I sit on everything, go to market, positioning, and growth. And aside from that, we only have two more team members full time. So hire number one was a community manager for us. That person is still with us. Greg manages the entire community. And then the rest are in development. Outside of that, it's just a few contractors that help us with some marketing stuff, design, some consulting, maybe some paid media stuff. But right now, we're just keeping it lean.
And Ramon,
go ahead.
So Ramon, I want to take a step back. So you've had one of your businesses acquired, and now you're working on Cast Magic. What have been some of the things that you wish you would have known before you sold your last business, and things that you're going into this business with of like, okay, I did this maybe not so right. I'm going to try to correct it this way in this actual new company.
Yeah, I think, you know, in hindsight, it's like, yeah, it's really easy to say. Circumstances were different then when I was starting the previous business. Before I owned my previous business, I owned like one of the largest Instagram growth businesses, got a cease and desist from Facebook overnight. Wow. In 24 hours. And this opportunity was right there in front of me, basically trying to say I didn't have the luxury to pick very much what I was going to work on. And I also didn't know enough of how to study a market and a wave or a trend. You know, I started years before UGC was a thing, kind of like ahead on the vision, but One thing I know now is that the timing is so important, picking the right market. Is the TAM big enough? Is the timing right? Is this the right wave to surf at the moment? It's something I wish I knew, because with Cast Magic, you know, even though we have a great product and are a very, very talented team, I just know how much more contribution the fact that it's just really good timing in terms of the market of AI. How much of a role that plays. Everything is just easier. You know, you have interest from investors, you have interest from customers, organizations are trying to solve this problem, talent wants to work for you. So that's one of the things I wish I sort of would have been more thoughtful about in my previous businesses. And then I think, what have I learned and done differently this time around? I think it goes back to the way I started the conversation, which is having the right data early enough. Knowing where to double down, knowing what channels to ignore, what is not worth to pursue right now. And all that comes from having good enough visibility into your data, being able to segment by cohort, by traffic source, by, you know, customer type, company size, etc. That has allowed me to become a lot more aggressive in our marketing than I previously was. I didn't have the confidence, looking back, to just really put the fire on, and that I do now, because I have a lot more certainty with good visibility. Mm.
Where do you see the market going, particularly related to AI? What are some things that folks should look out for? As someone who's, you know, again, researched and seen some signals in the marketplace, what should our listeners be thinking about as it relates to like generative AI and what's to come in terms of their roles?
Yeah, for sure. I think right now people think of content creation and they think of content creator, influencer, etc. I think content creator is going to evolve to also professionals having to create content for themselves to become an authority and stand out in whatever vertical they specialize in. Because the reason people make content is for two things. One is to either monetize and ultimately become a full-time creator, or number two is to become a thought leader within their space. And I think we're just going to continue to see this trend where professionals leverage all of their conversations, because every interaction is content. You just don't have the tools to extract the value from those conversations. So we're just going to see professionals making more content. And not only that, organizations also investing into their team members and professionals that work for them, to give them the tools and the resources to create more content. And I think the people that are doing it right now are people that are just ahead of the wave, and they're investing out of pocket personally. But this is a big trend. The only tools that exist right now to do this are, you know, Gong will listen to your conversations, etc. But it's just revenue intelligence. We need more tools that help us maximize the value within the media to create net new content. And so that's sort of the trend that we're trying to be first of.
Awesome. Well, and where are you? You're in Miami, so it looked like you were in Austin before with your other business. What would you say is the do you like about Miami versus Austin, and get a little play between the two cities?
Yeah, for me, it's very different. It's I love Miami. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, so I like the tropics. I naturally just went back down to the tropics, but you know, I love Austin as well. Such a good tech community. Austin opened my doors when I moved from Puerto Rico and didn't know anyone in there. I remember there was a place, Capital Factory. I just went in there. They received me, that whole community. You know, really, it's so much of the foundation of everything I learned. Miami just has a lot more diversity in terms of the verticals. You know, you have people in commerce, in consumer, you have people in SaaS, in media, whereas Austin is very heavy in SaaS, you know, and tech. Now it's having a lot of creators moving all to the east side. So really? that's a new development in the Austin community. But yeah, I just love that culture, diversity in Miami. I'm Hispanic. I love the food here. And yeah. I just like being able to go to the beach every now and then. And it feels like I live where I would vacation.
That's the way right there. Well, Ramon, thanks so much for sharing your story and helping us learn a little bit more about Cast Magic. If there's anyone out there listening who wants to get in touch with you or sign up for Cast Magic, how can they find you?
Yeah, for sure. So Cast Magic, castmagic.io, it's completely free to try it out. You can go in there, check it out. We also have an iOS app for those people who might want to use it on mobile. And then on socials, I'm on Twitter at Ramon G. Berrios, and then LinkedIn, Ramon Berrios. You'll be able to find me if you search.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, super glad to have you. Thanks for sharing. And for anyone listening who's kicking off a podcast, wants to transcribe audio in any fashion, go check out Cast Magic.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ramon. If you do any prospecting with LinkedIn, you have got to go get set up with Surf. That's Surfe. It's a tool you can use to add new contacts to your CRM system directly from LinkedIn in seconds. I'm using it every single day. I add contacts, follow my deals, keep track of notes, and it ends up saving me a bunch of time on prospecting and outreach, which means I can spend more time moving my deals along. The data is always 100% accurate since I don't have to copy and paste all the fields over from each and every contact that I want to put in my CRM. Instead, Surf does that all automatically with just one click in about 60 seconds. The team over at Surf has put together a very special offer for fans of Sales Players. There's a link down in the show notes and you can use the promo code JWSURF5. Don't forget the E at the end of Surf. That's JWSURF5. For 5% off your first year. Don't spend another minute doing things manually. Go get set up with Surf.